Words on Water. Words on Water.
Welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop. Going to talk in this episode about the coronavirus, a very hot issue in the news, a very important issue for us in the water sector to pay attention to. I'm glad to be joined by two individuals for this podcast. I have Scott Schaefer. He is wastewater practice leader with AE2S. He is also the chair of WEF's Disinfection and Public Health Committee. Scott, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I also have Dr. Rasha Mal-Bared. She is senior microbiologist with EPCOR Water Canada. Rasha, thank you for coming on as well.
It's my pleasure, Travis.
We've got a number of questions and topics to go into here. I know a lot of people in the water sector have questions about the coronavirus and what it means for us. But could we start with just what is the coronavirus?
So the coronavirus is a virus that's part of the coronavirus family. It's a larger group, really. But out of that group, we have known 7 human coronaviruses, so viruses that actually infect humans. There's many more out in the world that infect animals, but we only know those 7 infect humans. The ones that people might be familiar with that are related to this novel coronavirus are people have heard of SARS back in 2002, 2003, the big outbreak. That was a coronavirus, and it's actually closely related to this particular novel coronavirus, although this novel coronavirus is a new strain. The other one people may have heard of is a few years ago, there was the Middle Eastern equivalent, and that's MERS. So it is a coronavirus. It is enveloped, which is interesting for us from a public health perspective, because enveloped viruses are actually fairly susceptible to disinfection. They're easy to kill if you're doing the right thing, and that's a very important message here.
What do we know about the origin of coronavirus and kind of where it came from and where it's headed, if you will?
So back in December in 2019, we started hearing about these cases of pneumonia in China, in Wuhan, in the Hubei province. And at the time, the cause of those pneumonia cases was unknown, but they presented like viral pneumonia. So somebody isolated this virus from the respiratory secretions and analyzed the genome and realized it's actually a new virus that looks in some ways like SARS. And so at the time, all those cases were coming from a live seafood and animal market. So a lot of people presumed that, oh, it must be something that's coming from those animals, right? And that was a good assumption at first. But over time, we realized that while, yeah, maybe there was some interaction with the animals, many of those cases were the result of person-to-person transmission. So right now, there are cases all around the world and slowly growing in numbers. But I think that's why we're having this webcast today. Something very important about this transmission is the way the virus presents is presents much like a flu in a way, like a common cold, right? So in most cases, people might actually cough, they will have a fever, they will have a sore throat. In very, very few cases, though, there are some patients who came in with diarrhea. And so some scientists got very intrigued by that, and they analyzed the fecal material to look for the virus there, and they identified the RNA of the virus. So that's not actually the infective virus, but that is what you could call the DNA indicates presence, but it can't tell you if it's a problem, if it's actually infective. But that's why the wastewater world is so concerned about this, because if it was infective and present in high enough concentrations, perhaps we should be concerned under those circumstances.
We know that there's a big response, a global response to coronavirus going on right now. I'm just curious to kind of have a snapshot of what agencies, global agencies and U.S. agencies, our Canadian agencies, North American, are involved in the response and what their roles are, just so folks can have a sense of who's tracking this, who's responding, who should we be listening to?
Yeah, Travis, so I'll put this one mostly in the context of the WEF Disinfection and Public Health Committee and our interactions, which is generally consistent with the global interactions as well. So Russia just about a year ago, less than a year ago, had really started taking what had previously been the Disinfection Committee's Ebola work group. And, you know, we'd kind of been figuring that out. And, you know, what we often talked about was the next one. What's the next one? Well, it seems that as we're talking today, the next one has arrived.
Yeah,
it arrived a little sooner than I would have anticipated if you would ask me that this time last year. But we were trying to put together the infrastructure and the network to be able to do something quickly if and when the next one arrived. So you know, that response. You know, and it really did hinge on that fecal-oral pathway that Rasha had mentioned. You know, if this was strictly airborne, you know, we at WEF focus on waterborne infectious disease, and that's the group that the Ebola work group has transitioned into is the Waterborne Infectious Disease Outbreak Control, or WIDOC, work group. And that waterborne part is important. So when we were monitoring, and when some of the early reports of a potential fecal-oral pathway were starting to come out, you know, that's when we said, "All right, we're gonna put together information on this. We don't know exactly where it's going yet, but let's get the information together." And you know, right away we weren't exactly sure where we're gonna put that. We knew it might be an early publication of Water, Environment, and Technology, WEF's publication. It ended up being a fact sheet on the WEF homepage so that we could get it out even quicker. But Rasha really took that and ran with it, and up to the point of working on it. I don't even want to know how much on when she should have been on vacation. So the WIDOC committee put together the initial information, and then because of how important this information is, we did have that vetted with some of the main organizations that are involved in this globally, primarily CDC from a North American and global perspective from where we sit, but also through OSHA and EPA, but those reviews gave us a lot more confidence that the information that we were putting out was solid information. You know, OSHA probably isn't in the news as much relative to coronavirus, but for us at WEF, it's paying attention to all of our operators on the front lines. It's a big deal.
Well, that's a great segue for my next question, and I think Rasha kind of answered this question a little bit earlier, or hinted at it. Why should the water sector really be paying attention to what's happening with coronavirus?
Yeah, and that's my first point on that worker health. You know, as soon as we knew that fecal-oral pathway was a potential, you know, our treatment systems do a very good job of protecting public health, but we look at that once we get all the way to an effluent discharge back to a receiving stream, between where the wastewater is generated and the treatment facility, and even within the treatment facility, the water profession has a lot of operators literally in that pipeline. So that worker health piece was really important to us. So that's why investigating some of the pathways, you know, do we need to have an extra level of protection right now? What we're seeing is that as we've gotten into it, it's mostly do the things you should always be doing. You know, I visit a lot of wastewater treatment facilities, and some are better about their hygiene practices than others. If nothing else, it's a good reminder that, you know, follow those best practices and help to protect yourself.
What are the precautions that wastewaters should take, or that are part of the regular protocol that facilities should make sure that people are following?
I guess before we even get to the specific things, probably the biggest piece is don't panic. You know, this is not something, from what we've seen yet, that requires panic. Like I said, it's follow the normal best practices. You know, and that's going to be different for each utility and what each of those activities is that you should be doing. I might actually let Rasha elaborate on that, because she did a whole study at EPCOR on specific activities and risk assessment and what the appropriate PPE is for those. So Rasha has a lot more depth of knowledge in that area than I do.
Scott hit the nail on the head right there. Stay informed and absolutely do not panic. We work with wastewater on a daily basis, whether you're in the lab, whether you're in the field, whether you're on plant. The reality is we handle that untreated matrix every day. And there's always a possibility of infection if you're not taking your precautions, not wearing your PPE, not doing the right things to keep yourself safe from an infection, right? So the study that Scott is referencing was a quantitative microbial risk assessment. And we were actually just interested in knowing what the risk of infection was on a daily basis. Like, if your workers are not fully compliant and going around maybe not washing their hands or eating around your aerators or whatever that is, right? Then we calculated that the common risk of potential infection could be anywhere between 1 to 3 infections per year. So that risk is always there. This novel coronavirus presents us with a really great opportunity to communicate to our workers what is already an issue that should be on their minds all the time. So what I told the people that have asked me here at work at EPCOR is, you know what to do. Wear your PPE. Your PPE is protective. That study by Chuck Haas and Kyle Bibby that looked at Ebola prevention for drainage workers. Yes, absolutely. If you're a drainage worker and you're in a collection system not wearing your full PPE, of course there's a risk of infection. If not, in that case, it was Ebola they were looking at, but there could have been a risk of infection of any of the other pathogens that are there, the E. coli, the Salmonella, the cholera, the Vibrio, right? So that is an absolute number one. So once you know you're wearing your PPE and you're compliant, I urge you to kind of do the basics, right? Go out there, wash your hands regularly. If there's no soap and water around, use a hand sanitizer. It should at least have 60% alcohol is what we usually tell people. Whether it's wipes or just the regular gel, both of those work really well. Don't eat on your job sites. Avoid touching your face, your eyes, your mouth, your nose. It's very common, and I know we're all guilty of it. It's very, very easy to start touching your face, especially when you have goggles on or maybe a face shield or something like that. But that is a way for the organisms to potentially transmit to you directly to these membranes in your face that are potentially routes of entry into your body. And so the other thing is, of course, when you're sneezing or coughing, we always tell people, be sure to cover your mouth, sneeze into your elbow or into a Kleenex, even better, because then at least you're not carrying it around with you, whatever you sneezed out, right? Mm. And then the number one thing we've been telling people right now, though, we're recommending that people get their flu shot. Flu season is upon us, and the flu is essentially very similar in a lot of the symptoms to what coronavirus would look like, right? So we want to make sure that we don't have confounding factors that make people freak out for no reason. That's sort of the general message.
What I want to circle back to something we touched on briefly earlier, but I think is really critical. What do we know about how water treatment, the typical wastewater treatment process, impacts coronavirus?
Yeah, similar to most other pathogens that we're interested in, the you know, from a disinfection perspective, everything upstream of disinfection is just pretreatment. So what you usually think of as the core treatments in happening in a treatment facility, a lot of it is just physical removal. There can be some just natural die-off happening in those systems, but physical removal upstream of disinfection is the primary thing that's happening. You know, from a disinfection perspective, once we get to that actual disinfection step in a wastewater treatment facility, you know, whether you're doing UV or chlorine/chloramines or parasitic acid, this specific virus, as Rasha had mentioned, is easier to inactivate. Most of us aren't at the level of separating which virus falls into which category. You know, when I hear envelope virus, I think, well, it's got more protection. You know, you can think of, and that's probably the usual reaction to that term. But the important part about that envelope is that it's needed to protect the virus. I always think of virus like zombies. You know, they're not really alive, they're undead. You just need to inactivate them. But that envelope is susceptible to our disinfection processes. And if you can disrupt that envelope, then you will be able to inactivate that virus. So that's what our disinfection processes are doing. So, you know, what I really think this is the most important key to this is knowing that our regulations are working. The regulations that we have, whatever your treatment facilities regulations are, whether it's based on fecal coliform or E. coli, you know, those are a bacterial indicator. But if you're meeting your regulations, you're taking care of this virus as well. To me, that is reassuring, that even though this is a new virus that we didn't know about even 3 months ago, our regulations are taking care of it. You know, and then extending that, you know, to the water treatment side, you know, any that does get past the wastewater treatment and back into a river, if it does make it on the front end of a water treatment plant, that water treatment plant is going to do a really good job, because now you don't have the little bit of total suspended solids left. You know, that shielding that you can get, those are going to be the couple of virus particles that make it through a wastewater treatment facility. It's probably going to need some shielding. From a public health perspective, that combination of reducing pathogens significantly on the wastewater treatment facility side, and then that extra step of drinking water treatment, where those two things are present, we are protecting public health.
Yeah, and to add to that a little bit as well, the studies that are out there in the scientific community do imply that concentrations as low as 0.2 to 0.5 milligrams per liter of free chlorine are effective at inactivating SARS, the close relative of this new coronavirus, right? So another study looked at, again, the Ebola example. Ebola is actually far more resistant than this enveloped virus. So we know that a concentration as low as 0.16 milligrams per liter of free chlorine at a contact time of as little as 12 seconds gives you 3 log reduction. So that's a 99.9% reduction in numbers. That's actually quite significant. And most of our plants, as Scott said, if they are operating to their standard and meeting regulations, will be accomplishing that.
That's all good information to hear. Absolutely. One of the last things I wanted to just to ask is, so what should utilities do right now? You've said make sure that, you know, everyone is following standard protocol on PPE and so forth, and continue operations as normal. Aside from that, what do you recommend utilities do?
My first and foremost recommendation is to stay informed. Just the fact that someone's listening to this podcast, you know, you're not going to hear these words if you're not listening to it. You know, you are making yourself informed. And I think in a situation like this, having more information allows you to be more calm. You know, you're not going to get in a panic situation, especially when you find out, you know, this virus, from what we do, this is not a scary one in terms of what we need to do to inactivate it. What we have in place will do a good job. And then, you know, being ready to communicate that to your constituents and policy makers and elected officials, that's a big thing that utilities can do. The thing that I would add to that is, you know, use this as a reason to talk about how important wastewater treatment is to public health. You know, it's something that it's really easy to forget about because we've done such a good job about it. Communicating that it's part of why we do this, you know, that's an opportunity that we have right now.
Rasha, anything to add to that? What utilities should do right now?
One very last thing to add. Most utilities have what we call safe work plans or field level hazard assessments. I urge utilities at this point, if you're looking for something to do, that's actually a little more holistic in a way, because it won't just protect you from the novel coronavirus, but from other infections now and in the future, is look at your safe work plans, look at the tasks you do, and try to identify all the tasks that could potentially expose your workers to these biological hazards. And once you see them, once you know about them, work on controlling them and communicate that to your workers. So once you know what the issue is, you can step back and really work with people to try and protect them. Incorporate that into your standard operating practices, and make sure that you've thought of these as a potential hazard. I know we don't. It's we're more likely to talk about chemical hazards or slips, trips, and falls, but these are a hazard we should be aware of.
Yeah. Well, Scott and Rasha, I know that your information and knowledge is very appreciated by folks out there. I know it's been a busy time dealing with this, and your regular work, and everybody appreciates your information you're getting out there and sharing with the WEF community. So thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Words